Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast. Today we have the first of many to come with my friend and racer colleague, Robin Miller. We're looking at the Verizon IndyCar Series ahead. I don't know if I'd want to call this previews, but just more of looking at the themes that we think are going to be worth following as we get into this new season that kicks off. Actually, testing starts this week, believe it or not, private testing. And we move into the first open test early in February. The season itself kicks off March 12th at St. Petersburg. So despite the fact that we are just into the brand new year, it won't be long before America's favorite and oldest open wheel series is back in full action. So Robin and I, we put together a list of what we thought the biggest headlines might be in 2017. And we will certainly add to this. Have a whole bunch of other topics we're going to cover in future podcasts. So we dove into Joseph Newgarden and his new home at Team Penske and what he might expect there. We looked at Chip Ganassi Racing's move from Chevy to Honda, how that might help the Honda camp. Looked at Foyt and their complete driver change and engine manufacturer change. The Andretti team, obviously they won the Indy 500, the biggest one of all last year, but could they get back in the win column at other events, back to a more familiar place where they're a threat everywhere they go? Unfortunately, they weren't in 2016. Talked about Takuma Sato, whether he will make a difference as the newest and latest Andretti team member late in his career. Also closed on the KV Racing team, what might happen to them, and depending on the outcome, how that might impact the IndyCar series positively or negatively. So definitely the best way to get the latest Marshall Pruitt Podcast is to join our new Facebook page, Marshall Pruitt Podcast. And if you also want to subscribe to get every podcast as it becomes available, you can also jump on iTunes and do that there. So between Facebook and iTunes, we'll have you covered with the Marshall Pruitt Podcast. So off we go with my man Miller.
We are looking at the first of many things for 2017 with the Verizon IndyCar Series season ahead. Not going to do it all in one punch. We've got a lot of different things we want to look at. Forecast, predictions, pontificating, rambling, you name it. Two things that we've been told we're excellent at doing, by the way. This year, we got a lot of changes, I think some really good changes, and I think they should lead to some pretty significant headlines. So on the topic of the biggest headlines to watch going into 2017, I know that there are a few topics that have come to mind for you and I to delve into here for this first of a couple different preview-related podcasts. So the first one I'm going to kick off here with for you is, will our boy, Joseph Newgarden, in his move from Ed Carpenter Racing to Team Penske, replacing Juan Montoya as a full-time driver. Is that kid going to have an immediate impact, do you think? Or is it going to maybe take him a year like it did Simon Pagenaud to really hit his stride?
Good question, because when you think about Pagenaud and Ben Bretzman were together, all those, you know, they had a great relationship at Smith-Peterson. They led laps and they were fast, they just didn't win a race. And so now you've got Joseph going, and he's with the new engineer. You know, the first thing you think is, oh man, you know, what's going to happen? How's he going to deal with it? But when you've got three teammates and the depth of knowledge that Penske does, I don't know. I don't think, as much as I think Jeremy Millison and Newgarden were such a great combination and they really clicked, and he might miss Jeremy for a while, obviously Penske's resources will be, I think he'll win races this year. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't see how we get out of 2017 without one or more wins from Joseph. I don't think we're going to see him become an instant championship contender with them, and it's not because he lacks the ability. Not at all. I mean, hell, the kid was, fourth in the championship with Ed Carpenter, the first of the non-Penske teams. But if you look at what Simon went through, I do think that is a bit of an indicator of what might be in store for him. He and Ben, as you mentioned, awesome pairing, driver-engineer, kick-butt, were seriously fast and a serious threat the whole time with Schmidt Peterson. Getting to Penske, come to find out that those same setups you liked. Maybe you liked this a little softer, this a little stiffer at this track. Well, you know, Penske didn't necessarily say, hey, run whatever you liked in the past, we're all good. Is more a case of learning how Penske prefers to do things, how they view damping, how they view everything. So I think there will be a bit of a honeymoon period. It's going to take Joseph just to learn the Penske way. So akin to Simon, I do think the kid's going to be on the pace. He is coming from being in a Chevy, the Chevy Aero kit, Chevy engine from Ed Carpenter over to Penske, so there shouldn't be as great a transition. Keep in mind that Simon was in a Honda with Schmidt-Peterson before he moved over.
But good point.
Bottom line, yeah. I think Joseph's going to be more effective faster because he doesn't have as much to learn as Simon, but I think we're talking about 2018 before we pencil that kid in for becoming a true championship contender with them.
All right, well, we know the biggest non-driver story was Ganassi going back to Honda, so I guess the big question is, are his the talents of his people and his drivers enough to overcome what's been a pretty big obstacle the last couple of years? Honda getting their butt kicked by Chevrolet.
I look at the Ganassi drivers, Robin, honestly, and I think having a greater depth of driver talent never hurts. It's not as if Honda was lacking in really good drivers. If you look at the Andretti team, you look at Graham Rahal, you look at, you know, some of the other offerings within the Honda family weren't bad at all, but when you throw in Scott Dixon, Tony Kanaan, Charlie Kimball, you definitely get three upgrades right there. Max Chilton, by no means ready to claim him as an upgrade to anything because he didn't do anything in 2016 to make us think that he is of the caliber of his three teammates. But again, that's on him to reveal. But if we look at the overall move, we know that Honda's getting greater driver talent added to the overall pool. I think the big benefit for Honda, nothing new here, but the engineering side is really where I believe Ganassi is going to help Honda. Honda readily admits that, like its first aero kit in 2015, even though the 2016 was an evolution, there were still lots of question marks about how to get the best use out of it, where it was best. You know, the sweet spot was not nearly as big as the Chevy's aero kit. Granted, there are a few different configurations, this track and that track, but provided the Ganassi guys do contribute back to the overall data pool available to Honda teams. And even if they don't, even if they just take what they have learned and hopefully use that to their benefit, I think we're going to see a more competitive year from Honda despite this aero kit freeze, thanks to adding Ganassi. Is that going to overtake Chevy? Brother, we're talking the same aero kits that allowed Chevy to win 14 of 16 races and really only let Honda shine on the big super speedway. So that, to me, is the big question. Do you think adding Ganassi to Honda's mix is enough to shift that win rate so they get some on the street courses, road courses, or short ovals?
You know, you got to think Dixon's going to win a couple times, and you got to think that whatever, like you said, whatever ideas they can add. Honda was really, I mean, they were certainly tough on ovals, and, you know, I mean, Graham almost won Alabama and was competitive a lot of places. So, I just think with, you know, obviously Honda's spending a lot of money counting on basically Dixon to pull him out of, to get him back to victory lane a bunch of times. And I don't know if it'll be a bunch of times, but I think he'll win a couple. And, you know, by the next year, then everybody will be back to square one. But I'd say that, you know a lot more about it than I do, but just the things that Dixon might be able to just add with a test, and then Kanaan, those two guys, their feedback. So I'd say it's probably going to be money well spent by good old Honda.
What do you think about Foyt? That was a team to go the opposite direction. They've been, unfortunately, plumbing the depth of the IndyCar grid recently. Big overhaul during the offseason. Your boy Anthony Joseph and Larry Foyt, all-around driver changes. Moved over to Chevy, in theory, with Carlos Munoz there and our boy Connor Daly there and Chevy's. I mean, it all seems like it should be a big positive. Do you think those changes in the span of one season could help move them up significantly in the grid? Or is that maybe asking too much too soon?
Montoya had a pretty good lining. I think they've got some... It can be improved. I'm not sure it can happen in just 1 year. I'm not sure I could have done it 1 year. I'm not sure Kanaan could have done it 1 year. Obviously, both guys were in the frame for the Foyt rides. But I think what they got going for them is they got two hungry kids. And that's what, you know, I think that's what, not that Jack Hawksworth wasn't hungry, but something didn't click. I mean, he didn't forget how to drive, but there was, so they're going to upgrade their engineering staff. We know who it's going to be. We're going to let them announce it, but it's the guy's pretty sharp. The big test may be, you know, how can you have one team in Houston and one team in Indianapolis? How is that going to work? Is that going to be, is that going to undermine maybe some of the good things they're doing? I don't know. It's probably hard to say, but I'm not sure that's happened before.
Yeah, I also think this is a hard one to quantify, but the Foyt team has been left behind culturally as well. And if you look at how every other IndyCar team works, they are in or around Indianapolis. I realize that, you know, Penske's out east North Carolina. We got some Illinois representation. But you have folks plugged in very heavily to Indianapolis. It's great to see that the Foyt team is taking a step from its Texas base to having one of the cars in Indianapolis. But culturally, that's the thing that concerns me. You think about all the team-building things that the average team does, all of them being in the weight room together, all of them jogging and exercising and just really trying to go beyond, well, you know, the time they spend on the shop floor, but also just to build real team chemistry so that everyone is truly helping to uplift the organization. I don't see how going through this big effort to overhaul both drivers, switch to engine manufacturers, is then aided by splitting the team, and in theory, you know, still having a little bit of a weird chemistry dynamic. So, I mean, they have good people running the team, and, you know, it's not as if you have to have everybody under the same roof. And just to me, at least, Robin, I think if you're going to go through all the big efforts we just discussed to leave this one as a variable, as something where you might not have everyone on the same page when they show up for each race, you know, I don't want to say strangers, but I have to imagine, I don't know how strong the bonds are going to be when the guys in the tent across from you are ones that you, you know, see on a very limited basis each year, yet you're supposed to call them teammates and rely on them. So, again, it might be a little more of a nuanced thing than a real thing, but that stands out to me as a little bit weird.
Well, there's no doubt it's going to be a challenge because, like we said, I can't ever remember it happening before. I've never heard of a team split, so I think the good thing is Munoz has been quick on a lot of different places, and I think he'll help Connor on the ovals. I think A.J. Foyt will help Connor on the ovals. We saw what happened when Daly got out in front last year. He stayed there, and I think he's a good racer. So if they can improve his qualifying, they got a shot. Because there's times when Foyt's cars have been, you know, they're always, I mean, Sato was always good at Long Beach. They were always fast at Pocono and Indianapolis usually. So the series needs Foyt's team to have some success. And ABC Supply, my God, what a great sponsor. So they need some success too. Okay, probably the most disappointing story of 2016 was Andretti Autosport. I mean, they were, obviously Munoz had a chance to win Indy, and Ryan Hunter-Reay was competitive because he's one of the best drivers at certain places, but they were pretty miserable most of the year, and they seemed to find something at Sonoma, but what do you think? Can they get back to winning races? You know, they made some engineering upgrades over the season, even though they still got a Honda.
Yeah, and that's really where I think they have said, all right, that's the big differentiator in IndyCar. That, again, that's nothing new as well, but I mean, you look at the Rahal team, for example. What's the one thing they invest in more than seemingly anybody? That's engineering. Not just the race engineer, but the damper, aerodynamicist, simulation people, you name it. They've actually added even more for this year, but that's for essentially a one-car team. They really, really go heavy on the engineering side, and we've seen Graham, with this one full-time effort, jump up and be super, super competitive. The Andretti team already have a great group of engineers. It's not a case that they were lacking engineering depth. I think it was just a case of, the bar's been moved to have a deeper roster and add even more. And when you think about them acquiring Eric Bretzman, Scott Dixon's multiple championship-winning engineer from Ganassi, that's huge. And Eric is a big-picture guy. He's not just someone you throw in the timing stand and he goes out on pit lane and makes the car go quickly. This is a guy who can do that, obviously, but is also a real big project guy, real big testing and R&D guy. So I think you take him, add him into a Ray Gosselin and a Garrett Mothershead and all the other good engineers that they have there. All of a sudden, I see Andretti, of all the IndyCar teams, taking the biggest leap forward on the engineering front. Then you also look at Alex Rossi. Indy 500 winner, fantastic. He and Tom German did very good work with the Andretti-Brian Herta effort. I don't know if Tom was a perfect fit. Yeah, they actually parted ways with him at the end of the season. He was a contract guy. He's actually been picked up by Rahal. But moving to get Jeremy Millis, a Newgarden's engineer, and plug him in with Rossi, yeah, I think there's something brewing there. You also look at Sato coming in. I've never hidden the fact that I don't think much of Sato. I know that on his day, everybody knows that on his day, the guy is a serious operator. He just doesn't have many of those days. Regardless, him getting plugged into an Andretti car with Garrett, who used to work with at KV Racing, I have to believe that'll be a positive. But are they going to get back into the win column this year outside of the Indy 500? I have to believe so. I have to believe that between Rossi and Millis working together, Hunter Ray and Ray Gosselin, and, you know, could Sato win? It's always possible. Could Marco win? I know he needs to. I know he wants to. But, yeah, the engineering side, I think, is what is going to transform that team from a good but not great to back to something more familiar in seeing. What do you think about Sato, though, Robin? Is he... Do you think he's someone that, at his age, you know, he's, what, 40-ish or so? I mean, he's not as if he hasn't proven he can help a team or run up front from time to time, but do you think he's going to be a valuable contributor to Andretti's resurgence? Or do you think this is more of a, he's obviously the home team favorite for Honda, and this was the best available seat they could find him?
I think the latter, it was the best available seat I think that he could find, and that, you know, he's never been on a big major team like this before. He's had a teammate, so that'll help him probably more than anything, because it just seems like he struggles for consistency. There's never been a question about him being fast, and Montoya and I were talking about that. Montoya says, I still think this guy can win races, and he's fast, and I said, you know, I don't think there's any disputing the fact that he can win a race. It's just it's getting to the end of the race, and, you know, maybe some things happen we don't know about. You know, somebody was telling me they changed the setup of Pocono and he crashed on the first lap after starting third, and he didn't know what was going. I don't know if that's true or not, but he's somebody, as the season starts, that you're not going to, I mean, I don't think anybody's, he concerns anybody as far as we're going to have to beat him. I think Brian Hunter Ray, I think Rossi's the interesting thing. The interesting thing about the whole Andretti team is they won the Indy 500 last year, and it was still like they had a horrible season. I think they'd probably be the first to tell you. I mean, yeah, it was great that they pulled it out with Herta's strategy and Rossi doing a good job. But, you know, I think Rossi will be the – I think that's the guy that everybody wants to watch, and that's going to be the interesting story, especially with Jeremy Millis. I think he had some – I mean, he was damn good on oval for a kid that had never been on one before all year at different places. So – you know, he needs to win a race, and I think he'll be one of the big stories.
And I think you happened upon something that might actually be to Sato's benefit. We need to lobby for shorter races. I mean, you know, if the guy has a problem, get to the finish line. You need to shorten the finish line, right? Anyways,
well, win 125. That'll do it.
Yes, the Indy 50. Well, before we leave Andretti, let's maybe wrap up on Rossi. Do you think he has more wins in him? We know the Indy 500, the Indy's a special place, right? No, you cannot pick who's going to win, and often the winner is a genuine surprise. We did see the kid show up at Sonoma, I mean, and a few other tracks as well, but he ended the season really showing folks that, all right, I've learned a heck of a lot in my first year, knowing all the stuff we've spoken about, Honda, the aero kit freeze, and having a new engineer. Do you think he can go out and win at least one more race going into his second year just on straight speed instead of that flip a coin like we get at Indy?
I think he was faster on ovals than he was road courses, which is kind of surprising, kind of like Nigel Mansell. I mean, he's the world driving champion. He won one road course race, and the rest of his victories were ovals. I mean, think about how fast Rossi was at Texas, at least during the first stint, and then he was really fast at Pocono, and he had the fastest race lap at Indianapolis. So, I mean, he might be one of those guys that is just suited for ovals, and maybe his next victory will be on an oval again before it's a road course. You just assume that because of his experience in Europe and the fact that he was a good road racer, that that's where he's going to shine most. But maybe not. I think between between him and Jeremy, they'll win a race.
All right, let's wrap up our first of many looks into the 2017 season on a topic that we both hope has a positive ending. Don't know if it's going to. We're crossing fingers and various other appendages, but not sure if KV Racing is going to answer the bell. We want them to. We need them to. IndyCar, as you've said many times, needs more team owners. Been through a rough off-season with James Sully Sullivan leaving the team, so it's no longer KVSH, it's just straight up KV. We know that Kevin Kalkoven, who owns all the team's assets, was looking to move the team to Florida to do something, partner with Trevor Carlin. That's fallen through. Everything's boxed up and sitting in Indianapolis right now. We've heard that Kevin could decide to fund a one-car program on his own, or partially fund if they can find an interested driver. Not having KV on the grid would be a strange thing. It would also mean IndyCar's down to a car count that is closer to 20 than 30, for sure. What do you think, Rob? And what happens if KV doesn't show up for 2017, and would that reduced car count worry you?
Yeah, I guess you got to think about, you can put on good races with 18 cars. I mean, they did it in USAC's heyday for years. 18 car fields were it's the tough thing is when you get 18 or 19 or 20 cars, is when you go to run a 500 mile race like Pocono, you always worry about, my God, it's going to get spread out. And what if you have a little attrition or a crash and you're done? You know, I mean, there's been plenty of times where you think, God, I don't know if we have enough cars for a 500 mile race, except for Indianapolis, and that's a struggle to get to 33. But for KV and all, I mean, I think Kevin spent a lot of his own money, obviously, in Champ Car did, and I think him and Sully here lately. But, I mean, he made it real clear that he was tired of spending his own money. Can't blame him. It's tough finding sponsors. They won the Indy 500, and I think Vassar and Kalkoven, I mean, that was all I think they could ever hope to accomplish with a little team. But I just think that who's going to replace Kalkoven, and can Sully, will he ever come back? Would he come back with a team? And maybe Kalkoven and Vassar will just be an Indy 500 only team. I don't know. But the car count doesn't worry me as much as the owner count. That's what worries me, because, I mean, I keep saying we've got eight owners. Well, I mean, you got Peterson and Schmidt, so that's, you know, and Brian Hurd is involved in Andretti, so he's still an owner. But it's basically down to eight teams. I guess that's the most accurate way to put it. And, you know, you don't have to. I mean, Roger Penske turns 80 this year. So, and you know, your buddies are all the sports car guys. And, you know, we need the Wayne Taylors and the Mike Shanks. We need them to run. We need them to be IndyCar owners. I don't know what it's going to take, except, I mean, there's nothing to entice them right now. There's no money. The purses are terrible, and it's hard to find a sponsor, and it's expensive. So, I think this year's probably a bad gauge, because most people are going to wait till eight. If you're going to come into IndyCar, you probably were going to at least wait till next year, because then, or 18, because, you know, everybody's going to be on even playing field with aero kits. So, but that's the concern to me, the number of owners, which obviously directly affects the number of cars.
And that's a good stopping point and a topic for us to pick back up in our next edition, which is creating more owners. IndyCar has a plan to put together a universal aero kit, make the cars look sexier, get rid of the imbalance between the Chevy and Honda aero kit, just leave it down to engines, straight up. Whoever has the most horsepower and reliability is going to come out with the championship. What should IndyCar's focus be for the future? Because when you have Roger Penske with four cars, when you've got Chip Ganassi with four cars, when you've got Michael Andretti with four cars, that's three owners with 60% of the field. All it takes is one or two of them to decide they're done, and IndyCar pretty much doesn't exist. So it tells us that just from a business standpoint, from a rule standpoint, a financial standpoint, beyond 2018 universal aero kits, beyond whatever the next chassis might look like when it comes along in 2020 or so, IndyCar has some much bigger questions to ask itself if it wants true health, true security as it looks to the future. And that's really only going to come with finding a formula, developing a formula that has the Mike Shanks, the Wayne Taylors, the you name it, saying, hey, all right, those numbers make sense to me. I can afford that through sponsors and paying drivers, I need to consider getting into IndyCar as well. We aren't there right now, and I don't think it's going to come before we get to that new car, whenever it does come, 2020, 2021. But it's a good topic for us to dive into and chop up more in our next edition.
All right, have fun in Daytona.
And that was Robin Miller and myself taking our first look at a whole bunch of themes, stories, forecasts, and prognostications for the 2017 Verizon IndyCar series to come. Again, we'll have more of these. We're going to do this on a fairly frequent basis because we do it on the phone already, just on our own. So we figured, you know what? Why save that for ourselves? Let's clean it up, remove some of the adult talk, and just focus in on what we think is going to be coming for next year that might be of interest for IndyCar fans. So again, you can find every episode of the Marshall Pruitt Podcast by jumping in and joining our new Facebook page and also subscribing on iTunes. So, as always, I'm Marshall Pruitt. Thanks for listening.